Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here. Sitting across from me is my beloved co-host.
Beloved co-host, Mike Cosentino. We got a crowd this morning.
Why don't you introduce him, Mike?
We got Gary LeMaster, who's been on before. This is our the brains behind the brawn here. That we do the heavy lifting, but he does all the thinking. We have another thinker. We got a preponderance of thinkers. We got Bill Timmerman.
Good morning,
folks. Clarkdale, Arizona. Here going to talk about gun control.
Yeah, so we have two of our writer researchers in with us today, and we're going to talk about, as Mike said, gun control. Let's ask Gary, set the stage for gun control in the United States, gun control worldwide. What are some of the statistics or some of the perspectives people need to know?
Well, some interesting statistics, I think, are that there have been 70 mass shootings in the U.S. since Tucson. Since Gabby Giffords was shot in
two years ago.
There are 34 mass shootings in the U.S. and in 2012. We're now to the point where you can't refer to the Aurora mass shooting without having to specify which one.
Oh, my gosh.
Because we've had two there recently.
Right.
On average, 32 people a day are murdered with guns in the U.S., 6.9 times more than all of the murders by guns in 22 other wealthy nations combined.
When you look at the statistics, folks, the statistics for the U.S. are in like 4 and 5 digits. The statistics for most other countries are in like double digits.
Well, squeeze this. You said there's only two countries with the concealed carry laws.
There's only two countries in the world, folks, that many people believe that they have a right to carry a gun rather than it's a privilege. Most countries, it's a privilege to carry the gun. You have a reason for it, and they let you carry a gun. That's right. And there's different rules about it. But there are two countries in the world which many people assert you have a right to carry a gun. One is the United States. The other is Yemen. So Yemen and the United States on the same page.
Good company.
So, Gary?
I can throw in a few other things that I've found interesting is that, in 1986, the NRA started pushing the concealed carry laws, the shall conceal and carry laws. There are two different types of concealed weapons laws. There's the shall, which means that anybody who requests a concealed carry permit has to be given one unless they have a felon in their background. Or a felony in their background, or if they have a mental illness or some other reason that's overriding. In other states, it's a may issue. There are four states that have unlimited carry laws, and Arizona is one. We have open carry and concealed carry, and no restrictions. In 86, the NRA started pushing this conceal and carry law across the country. And just for example, in 1965, before all this started, there were far fewer murders, but the percentage by guns was 57%. By the time that the laws were instituted, by 94, that was up to 70%. And we've been hovering right around the 65 to 70% murders by guns since then.
When I lived in New York City, people have the image that you can't get a gun in New York City. You can't carry a gun. This is not true. You have to apply for it, and you have to have a reason for it. If you're dropping large sums of money, if you have a business that's open late at night, there's dozens and dozens of different reasons, but you have to apply for it. You have to have a background check and so forth and so on. So, there are stereotypes, I think, Mike, around the country where you can't have a gun. And that's not true. The other thing in New York, when I was on a jury, and we were on an attempted murder case, and we convicted the fellow of attempted murder and attempted assault. Those crimes were almost no penalty. But the fact that he had an illegal gun, that's what sent him to jail.
Yeah.
That he was a felon and he possessed a firearm. And so in New York, you know, one of the ways that they've dropped the current crime rate, it's about a fourth. The murder rate is now one fourth of what it was in the 80s. It's down to 414 people a year, which is still a lot. But considering gang violence, that's a big drop. And one of the ways they do is they stop, and if you have a gun, you can be arrested. Now, you're not going to go a long time to jail, but it provides some way to suppress crime, and it seems to have worked.
Yeah, a lot of this conversation is going to be centered around the NRA, and that's as it should be. I'm looking at I looked at a Moyers article, Bill Moyers, and it talked about in 1996, the NRA was very successful at preventing the Center for Disease Control, the kind of the premier organization in the United States that kind of looks at us and see what's wrong with it, preventing them from doing any studies on gun violence.
So there have been no gun studies, or there have been no governmental-based gun studies?
At least not from the CDC, ones, right? not from the big, you know, that particular source. There's been plenty. We're sitting around here. Everybody's got gun studies in front of them. Since then, 165,000 Americans have died from guns. 427,000 have been shot by guns. So what the Moyers article talked about, what's the ultimate goal of the NRA? If everybody's packing a gun in America, is this going to make us safer?
They believe it will.
Over the same period of time you're talking about, Mike, one of the things I find interesting is the paranoia that has grown. You know, the reason for carrying guns has been pushed by the media.
Oh, absolutely.
Especially by the conservative pundits. It's, we want to make everybody frightened of everybody else and frightened of our government, so we all have to arm ourselves.
Gun sales go through the roof.
With assault
right
weapons.
Yeah.
Right.
And if you look at the situation in New York, where people can't carry a gun normally, you have to get a permit, the murder rate's just been dropping. So, As the crime rate generally in the country has been dropping, the hysteria about wanting more guns has gotten greater and greater. And
the other problem is statistics don't cooperate. I mean, there was a story on NPR this morning about Chicago with 506 people killed last year by guns, and this is a spike. So the question is it just a spike in the murder rate, or is this some sort of trend, even though guns are fairly controlled in the cities? You know, every time somebody gets killed in D.C. or New York, the NRA talks about, and this is a place where they control the guns. You know, you have this whole negative campaign going on against gun control in those cities that have it, even when the statistics go the other way. But like I said, Chicago last year, But the wisdom is that you have to go down to the individual, and my experience bears this out, you got to go down to the individual neighborhood. You got to go down to the individual street corner, and you will find the reasons for spikes in gun violence rooted in poverty and
it's interesting. It's always in poverty, isn't it?
But
those are where you see the gun spike.
But it's what is happening on the local level. I mean, it's just like any time you walk through any urban area, you know, it's best to know where you are. So the answer is that it's a spike in Chicago, and it's because of, I mean, those people that live in Chicago know why it's happening.
And this isn't the NRA, for example, that we knew when we were young, right, Bill?
No.
We come from rural Oklahoma.
Hardly.
And everybody had guns, and everybody went hunting, but there wasn't the cult of the gun. When did this cult of the gun
I don't know.
Develop?
When I was a kid, my dad was a career Army officer, a combat Army officer. He served on the front lines in both World War II and Korea. He would not allow a handgun or a rifle in the house. We had lots of shotguns, and we hunted and shot skeet and did stuff like that. But the reason he gave was you cannot legitimately hunt anywhere near a settled area with a rifle because of a rifle's range. And handguns are of no use at all except shooting people, and he wouldn't have one in the house. And I, you know, I, as I say, I hunted, I shot skeet, I was on a rifle team, competed in shooting and target shooting and stuff like that, and was for a time a member of the NRA. But the NRA was a place that taught you gun safety, not an organization run by a psychopath who wants to put a 9mm with a 15-round magazine on everybody's hip so that they can feel big.
Yeah. And I was an NRA member, too, and the NRA went one direction, and there was another hunting group that I belonged to, the Isaac Walton League, and they went a different direction. They never became extremists. They support hunting and stuff. They're a legitimate and very, very good hunting organization still out there, but instead of having how many, Gary, how many members does the NRA have?
It has roughly 4 million.
Yeah, and I think when I checked, the Isaac Walton League, for example, has 300,000. So you can see there's a percentage.
That's a good point. You've got two ex-NRA members. I'm ex-military. I spent 9 years. So it's not like lily-livered, knee-jerk liberals sitting around discussing gun control.
I own two guns.
Well, there you go.
So it's not that we're against guns, and I love target shooting. I don't do it, in a long time, but it's a lot of fun, and I admit that. But the ideology, the cult of the gun, the cult of open carry, that you can intimidate people in a traffic accident if you have a gun and they don't. And then, I think what, the thing about open carry is they want everybody to carry a gun. But what happens is, you have a gun and the other guy doesn't. And then you have a Glock and he has a revolver, and he's 20 years old and you're 80 years old. It's just not going to work out, folks.
You're going to get Trayvon Martin's what you're going to get.
I think we should point out that we're not talking about taking away everybody's guns.
I don't think anybody is. It's absolutely impossible. How many guns are there in the country? Millions. There are 270 million firearms.
You couldn't possibly
in the United
do
States
it.
States is the estimate.
And every time people sit around talking like this, the sales skyrocket. They're up 40%, I hear.
Well, see, the problem you have as a gun manufacturer, remember that whenever you buy a gun, they kick in money to the NRA. The problem gun manufacturers have is there's no planned obsolescence in a gun. We have working revolvers from the 19th century. You buy a gun, you never need another gun. You might have to have it cleaned or repaired, but it's not like an iron, you can actually get a gun repaired, folks. So you don't need another gun. So the thing is, if you can create hysteria and fear, then you can sell more guns. Right. And if you have a 15 magazine Glock, why not sell a magazine that has 5,000 shells in it? And, it's just that kind of thing. So there's a tremendous amount of money. And I think when you look at the pro gun side and the anti gun side, and we're guys are sort of in between, is that the pro gun side has this huge industry pumping money into it. An industry that has to scare people or it won't be profitable. It won't be able to sell more and more guns.
Well, here's another thought too. A muzzle-loading flintlock blunderbuss would be fine for home defense, but you can't walk down to your local grammar school and kill 26-year-olds with it.
The thing that I'd like to point out too is that when we talk with this whole paranoia of that's created the gun culture, whenever there's a mass shooting, the gun sales go through the roof.
That's right.
And whenever there's a threat of any form of regulation, first of all, we already have regulation of guns. You can't, the Second Amendment says ownership of arms. It doesn't specify which type of arms. We can't go out and create our own atomic bombs and have them at home. We can't even own a working hand grenade. So there have been limits all along, and the Supreme Court has upheld those limits up until recently when we got ideologues involved in the Supreme Court. So there's always been gun control, but now it's gotten to the point where I think it's so incredibly silly is that you can go out and buy a 50 caliber sniper rifle that'll blow a hole through an engine block. You'll take down a helicopter, aircraft.
At 3,000 yards.
Yes.
Why does the Constitution, and I don't have it right in front of me, it said a well-regulated militia. being necessary, the right of arms should not be abridged. Why are there two clauses? Why didn't it just say you can't have any restrictions on weapons?
When it was written, there was no standing army. It was designed to create a militia to defend the United States.
Well, you know, you think about the Civil War. There's plenty of accounts of the Civil War where the Civil War is getting going, right? The Confederacy doesn't have a standing army. What they have is the local, local area. There's a guy who's maybe, been in Congress and he owns a lot of land and he's an important character. Maybe he's a judge or whatever. He becomes the colonel of the local regiment. And they call everybody down to the town square and you bring your own weapon. This is the American tradition, which is you come together to form local militias. The local militias are welded together in an army, and then you go fight the British or the Yankees or whoever it is. Now, think about the world since World War II, and that justification no longer exists unless you're the Taliban, right? You're not gonna be able to fight either an invading army or an oppressive government with homemade weapons with all different calibers that you bring to the town square and then somebody teaches you how to march. That ain't gonna work. So the justification for carrying firearms in the Second Amendment no longer is really valid, and they've turned it into something that allows every psychopath in the world to go around strapped, and it's nonsense. It's uncivilized.
Here's the statistics again. 270 million firearms in the U.S., 89 firearms per 100 people. The next country that has the most firearms is India with 46 million firearms, and they have 4 firearms per 100 people. 44.5% of the Earth's population has 40% of the guns.
Jeez.
One more fact. Yeah, and that is the U.S. has similar rates to violence as somebody punching somebody in the nose as other countries, Australia and England and so forth. Yeah. What it has is an exaggerated and extreme homicide rate. So there's as much fisticuffs going on everywhere else as there are here.
Right.
It's just the people are not dying and not getting shot in the same situations.
Well, it seems like the ease of getting a gun makes a big difference. I want to get down to a personal level. The statistics are shocking and meaningful, but this is from an article in Sunday's Republic. Lori Roberts is a columnist down there. She talks about this girl Christy, and that she in February she hiked South Mountain, called her psychiatrist, threatening to shoot herself. The psychiatrist notifies the police. They come to the web. They find the girl on the mountain. She hands them the cell phone. They talk her down. They take her to a mental health facility, and they confiscate her gun for safekeeping. February. In April, she's kicked out. She goes from the mental health facility, spends a week or so there. She goes to a halfway house, starts drinking again, doesn't get a job, gets kicked out in April. So here's a girl with a history of mental illness. Threatened suicide for years, and so on May 5th they give her back her gun on May 7th actually, after she gets through all of this, the reason is legally they were required to. She had cooperated. She had never fought going to a mental hospital. She'd never been judged by a judge to be incompetent. She always went along with the help that she got. Therefore, there was nothing in her record that prevented her. They give her back her gun on May 7th. 15 hours later, she shows herself and kills herself. And her father is incredulous at this. He wants to see. He's a retired airline pilot named Terry. And he's been working in the state for legislation, at least to keep the guns out of the hands of people like his daughter who are bona fide mentally ill.
What do you think the chances are? Let's go around the table here, starting with Gary. What do you think the chances are, because people ask me this fairly frequently, of having gun reform now after the recent massacres?
I think, personally, it's 50-50. I think that I think that there's, if we're ever going to have any sort of reasonable gun, and let's not call it control, but regulation, you know, we track the VIN numbers of vehicles, but we don't track the registration of firearms. And I just think that we're going to continue to see mass shootings unless we do something. And I want to point out one thing is that the thing that's consistent in every mass shooting, this idea that somebody armed is going to be able to stop it, is ludicrous. You know, in several of these mass shootings, there were armed people right there on site.
Columbine had an armed policeman on site at the high school.
There was a mass shooting in Fort Hood, you know, in the middle of an army base that is certainly not a gun-free zone.
It happens in Afghanistan, folks, all the time.
That's right. Heavily armed, perfectly well-trained people. If somebody
with their guns in their hands.
Nobody wants to face the fact that if somebody gets the drop on you, right, Gary, you're pretty much gone.
The one thing that's...
Especially if they have a semi-automatic weapon. I mean...
The one thing that's constant in all of these is when you listen to the interviews of the victims that survived, is in the bystanders, they all say that it happened in an instant. It happened so quickly, I didn't have a chance to respond. All I could do is try to duck.
It doesn't sound like you imagine, too, folks, if you're not around fire. Bill, what's your take? Do you think there'll be...
I think that, you know, the increasing frequency of these massacres and the increasing numbers of people being killed and the fact that this time it was a bunch of six-year-olds that everybody can identify with probably means that at least for a time they'll actually talk about this in Washington. But I would bet my life savings that absolutely no legislation will come out of this.
What do you think, Mike? It's-
You know, I got in trouble for this down at the coffee shop when I said, no way. And my liberal friends got mad at me because they said, oh, yes, the trend is going. It's finally going to happen. But I'm going to say no way.
Well, let me. This might be a good time to provide a counterexample.
Yeah, let's talk about. Bill wants to talk about Australia, and I think for many Americans, Australia, even though it has 20 million people instead of 310 million people, is the country sort of most like the U.S. The culture is sort of like ours. History is a little bit.
They got
like
surfing.
Ours.
They got rock and roll.
They got Crocodile Dundee. Stuff. Everybody loves. Every American loves Crocodile Dundee.
There is an alternative, or at least Bill thinks. There's an alternative. Tell us what.
Well, I think the lesson here is political will. One thing, Australia is a rough outback, you know, ranching culture, just like the United States had. The one thing it didn't have in its history was a civil war, of course, which tends to, you know, create a state of polarization in the country that lasts a long time. So there are similarities and there are differences. But in Australia, in Australia, guns are regulated by the states rather than being by the federal government. So, the gun rules were fairly lax even in the cities because Australia's culture is based on this, you know, the sort of rugged individualism same as ours. But then what happened in the 80s was two things. One was the marketing of these military weapons to people. And the other thing was that they had a few of these shooting massacres similar to the ones we've had, except when you look at them, and these occurred in the 80s, there were four or five of them. You look at the numbers of people killed, there were like five people, seven people. So there were beginning to be an argument in Australia about gun control, more stringent gun control. And the argument was between the sport shooters and the ranchers and the people in the urban centers, pretty much like it is in the United States. And then came 1996. In 1996, there was something called the Port Arthur Massacre. Port Arthur is a historic site in Australia. It's in Tasmania, which is in southeastern Australia, and it's about 60 miles south of Hobart, which is the capital of Tasmania. And it's kind of like the, in America, you probably compare it to the Alamo. It's the site of one of the prisons that the British used to house prisoners transported from England and Ireland, which is, and these prisoners once released formed the core population of Australia, and it's part of the founding myth of Australia. It's a small place. The permanent population is only about 490 people. But it's one of the most visited tourist sites in Australia because it's a thing about roots, like the Alamo, right? So on April 28, 1996, a guy by the name of Martin Bryant, who was later proved to be mentally incompetent, drove up to the Port Arthur Historical Site with an AR-15 with a 30-round magazine and a Belgian FN assault rifle, and opened up on people. And this went on pretty much all day. He didn't kill himself. They finally caught him. But the death toll was 35 dead and 23 wounded. That was more than the total number of people killed in previous mass shootings.
What happened?
Well, there was a national, you know, cataclysm, basically.
And the restrictions come in from a conservative government.
Well, what happened was John Howard, who's a conservative, he would be a center-right Republican in the United States, but he's vehemently opposed to people having guns. He has said many times publicly, "I don't want to go down the road that America went down." He said he hates guns. He doesn't want people to have them. So because, however, the guns are controlled by the states in Australia, what he did in 1996 with a lot of public support was he called together the police ministers from all of the states, and they formed a national agreement on firearms, okay? And then they went back and the states passed laws. And then they had a buyback program. They bought back 643,000 semi-automatic weapons. But the bottom line is, these restrictions forbid anybody in Australia who isn't in a category like police or military from owning any semi-automatic weapons at all. That includes shotguns, rifles, and pistols. And there's a number of categories that they divide the guns into. And the only way to own a gun in any of these categories is if you belong to a certain class of people and if you state a reason.
So they were successfully able to just do something we're not necessarily recommending. Here they just banned all semi-automatic.
They just banned all the guns.
Did it work?
They banned all the guns. They banned all the ammunition. They won't sell you the ammunition. And interestingly enough, when you give a reason, they don't allow self-defense as a reason for owning a gun. Anyway, the upshot is there has been only one mass shooting since, and that was in 2002. It only killed five people, and it was a guy who had stolen a weapon from a gun club and used it. And they have now got further restrictions on the gun clubs. So since from 1996 to the present, there have been none of the kind of shootings that are causing so much concern in the United States.
Who was it? Harry Truman says there are people who believe it can be done, and there are people who believe it can't be done, and they're both right.
In Australia, they had the political will to do something. They did it. It worked. End of story.
There will probably be some restriction on automatic weapons, you know, but when this is all over, there will be some restriction on magazines and automatic weapons. That seems to be the direction it's going. Don't forget, folks, VBID.org, VBID.org. If this conversation and many, many others are on that website, we will. What are we doing next week?
Next week we have Michael Weinstein. He's the chairman and founder and head of the Military Religious Freedom Foundation. He comes from a long line of military families, and his son was sort of persecuted, mistreated when he went to the Air Force Academy. They're Jewish, and the culture there is very, very fundamentalist. And so he formed a foundation. He's been on national news for a long time.
So Mikey Weinstein next week.
Yeah, and Mike and Gary at least will be here. I'll be on vacation, but I think it's going to be a great interview, guys. I think you're going to enjoy talking to him. He's a a major political force.
It's an interesting topic, and I'll talk about it.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.